ESPN, so to get the opportunity to do it, it was great. And you know, my colleagues couldn't have been more welcoming. And I knew going in that, you know, I just told myself, you know, I'm coming in there to bring it. And it was refreshing because, you know, I think when you go in there, there's always that, there's a sense like, man, you know, I've seen, you know, whether it's, you know, Jay Harris, or I've seen Hannah Storm, or, you know, I've seen those guys from afar, but you've never had the opportunity to work with them. And it's, you know, it's always something when you finally sit next to them and then they're like, hey, I've been waiting to work with you. And it's like, what? So it was fun, man. They were great. And one of the best things that I've ever done.
Almost like joining the Yankees.
Yeah. No, see, I would say differently. I would be like joining the Cincinnati Reds, but people would laugh at me like you're doing right now.
Absolutely. All right. Now, I saw some of the messages on the email that you're covering the Final Four. Yeah. How significant of an opportunity is that for you? And that's one of the largest events, right? NCAA basketball, and everybody watches the Final Four.
Yeah.
How significant of an opportunity is that for you?
You know, it's great. I mean, you know, again, when I came to ESPN, I told them, I said, I'm coming here to do big events and make my mark, so to speak. And it was great that, you know, my first season of doing basketball there, you know, obviously I got the chance to do some NBA and college basketball, obviously. And the leader of college basketball there said, listen, you know, we have, talking about ESPN, we have the international rights to the Final Four and the championship game. And generally, we want somebody, our A-level people doing it. And he said, I'd like for you to do it this year. I think it was Sean McDonough who's done it in the past for years. And he said, I'd like for you to do it this year and work with Jay Billis. And it was great. I mean, we had a great time last year doing it. And then he hit me up again this year and said, look, you know, again, I need you to do the Final Four in the championship game. And I think this year, you know, he said, you're going to be working with Billis again. And I think we're going to have Dick Vitale working with us too, because I think, you know, he's back and doing games again. So it'll be all three of us doing it. So it's fantastic. And I took it as, hey, look, I'm doing the Final Four and doing the championship game. Like, you know, it's the Super Bowl and go do it. But, you know, I had friends who would text me like that weekend because they were on vacation, let's say in the Bahamas or wherever. And they were like, I'm watching the Final Four and I can't believe I'm hearing you do this game. So I forget, because, you know, I'm thinking, you know, everybody just in the States are watching this, but I forget when you walk out of, or when you're outside of the United States, it's us, it's ESPN who you're hearing and seeing. So it was great. And I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Absolutely. So does that mean you're going to convince Dick to do a Diaper Dandy?
I don't think I have to convince him. That's just going to come. You know? it will. He and Jay will have a battle for the mic because they're both good talkers. So yeah, it is just trying to make sure that I get the chance to call some action in between those slogans that they both have. Yeah.
All right. Hey, so we're going to move on to boxing, right? Ryan Garcia, Javante Tank Davis, New York, LA, you were there. Can you describe the energy? There was a difference in energy on the both locations. Can you describe the energy from your perspective on both locations?
Yeah, I think from New York, I think it was highly anticipated, right? And I think once we had gotten like, okay, it's a half hour late, it was like, okay. And then once we got to almost an hour, you could tell, like, you know, I think Ryan's camp was like, okay, this is getting to the ridiculous part. And listen, I mean, you know, Javante you know, he learned from the best. I mean, you know, he learned from Floyd. So, you know, those type of head games they would like to play with people. I mean, heck, I remember when we did, I think it was Floyd and McGregor. It was the same thing at Brooklyn. I mean, I think, you know, Floyd came hour and a half late and McGregor said, okay, well, I'm coming an hour late, you know, so they tried to do that with each other. But I think Gervonta learned from him on those things. And I think that's what he wanted to do is kind of mess with Ryan a little bit. And I think it really affected, like you said, the mood of New York, because Ryan and his team, if you saw it at one point, what were we at, like an hour and a half late, I want to say, before we
almost
started?
Almost two hours.
Yeah, hour 45, I want to say. Yeah. It had gotten to the point where they were like, hey, look, we're just going to go out on stage and we're going to sit down and we're going to just ask the media, are there questions? Go ahead, because we're going to answer your questions, then we're leaving. And I think, you know, the powers that be said, okay, you know, Brian, why don't you just go out there and just start it? And if these guys are here, if Gervonta shows, he shows. And we started it. And I think he came in maybe like 5-10 minutes into it. So I think that kind of affected the mood of New York until the face off. And then, you know, you saw that at that point, you know, it was like, all right, let's get this going. But LA was totally different. I mean, I think, you know, once we got to LA, the funny thing was they both stayed in the same hotel in LA and they could see from their hotel room where we were because we were at the Beverly Hills Hilton in their outside in their garden. And there, I think I want to say it was the Beverly Hills, I want to say maybe the Waldorf for them where they were, but on their balconies, they could look down and see. And so Ryan said, okay, I'm not going to play the game this time. I'm going to stay up on my balcony and look down. And then I'm not coming over. I'm not walking over until I see Tank pull up. And so I think, yeah, in LA, maybe, what was it, 45 minutes? I want to say
it wasn't that long. Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't come over until he saw Tank's car pull up. And then he's like, okay, now I'll walk over. And you could tell at that point, it was like, yeah, let's get this on. That was the energy, I think, that big energy that everybody wanted to see. And they came right out of the gate. And they even said that, you know, I think we said, look, let's have them face off at the beginning too. So, you know, they get a chance to see each other's face, look into each other's eyes, and you can see that energy right at the very beginning that they were ready to fight. You know, this has been a fight that they've been talking about for a long time, and I think it's going to be a really special evening, April 22nd.
All right. And then, if I'm not mistaken, you were there for the Benavidez plant?
Yes.
How was it being in that room? Because those two guys, man.
Full disclosure, so I for that one, I mean, I already knew that those guys don't like each other. I mean, that's obvious. And so we stayed, at least I know Benavidez stayed in the same hotel I was at. I think it was that Marriott there right across from crypto.com. and so when I was walking over to the press conference, they had already had a little interaction downstairs, and I saw that. So I was like, okay, this I know this one's gonna be a little spicy. No, I don't even need to really juice this one up. There's, you know, usually, you know, you want to write something, and I try to think about what am I going to say at this press conference. And I mean, it was just like, hey, look, it's been 5 years, and then he doesn't like each other. He doesn't like each other. Let's get this on. And I remember I just going to those guys before and I said, listen, I understand tensions are high. You know, we want to make sure we sell the fight, but we also want members of the media and your fans to hear what you have to say. So let, you know, when I went into David's area, I said, you know, let Caleb say what he wants to say. And I will make sure that you get every opportunity to respond and every opportunity to speak what you want to say uninterrupted. And they both were like, okay, cool. No, that great. That's what I appreciate. And man, we got up there and I mean, and I knew it. I said, okay, and they had all kinds of security. And I told him, I said, look, it's going to be cool. Because even Caleb said, look, I learned my lesson with Canelo. You know, I'm going to be cool. And he said, and he even told me, he said, when I come up, I'm going to put my hands in my pocket. That way, you know, even though I may be a little heated, you know, I'm not going to throw anything. I said, okay, no problem. But what I intentionally, I don't know if you watched the video. What I did intentionally was when I introduced, let's say, David, and he came to the podium, if you notice, I moved over on his left shoulder where I was standing right next to Caleb and David was there, right there at the podium. So in other words, I was in between them. That way, if there anything happened, I would be in between them and we could break them up, because I knew it'd take security a minute or two to run up on stage. And so that way we would break any up, no punches would land, so to speak. And then the same thing with Caleb. When Caleb came in, if you noticed, I moved over to the right. That way I was right there in between those two. And man, I mean, as soon as Caleb started, you know, you saw David get up and I was like, oh, come on now. You know, you need to sit down.
He's a big boy.
Let him finish. And then his dad got, you know, I didn't expect Jose to be as fired up as he was. So, you know, his dad got into it and, you know, David got up, I think, a couple times. And I had to tell him to sit back down and let Caleb finish. But, you know, Caleb has a way, man, of getting under people's skin, and he does it on the sly way. And, you know, again, when he said, I think when he ended it by, you know, listen, I'm going to show up on weight. I'm not going to do cocaine. I was like, oh, this is not going to go. I knew that was going to get a rise out of him, and it did. And so, yeah, that was intense, man. Those guys, listen, we use a lot of hyperbole sometimes to hype a fight. There is none needed mm-hmm. for that one. And I'm almost thinking about in that fight, to me, it's almost like the cooler head will, I think, become the winner. Because I think if you harness so much anger in there, you may walk into some shots. So I think both of those guys are going to have to really control that anger when they get in there and fight, because there's a lot of animosity between those two.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now, you have the Last Stand podcast, right?
Yes.
Just kind of curious on how did it go from the idea in your head to an actual product?
Yeah, it was, it started, man, in during COVID, when COVID first hit, and I want to say that was like March of, what, 2020? 2020. I want to say?
Yeah, 2020.
March of 2020, and, you know, when sports shut down, basically in March, at the end of March, I mean, I was like many guys in my business, not doing anything. I was just sitting here. I mean, really, just sitting here. And I think it was maybe like April or May. And people had came to me in the past about hosting a podcast, but it was like, hey, it'd be more of an informative one, or it'd be, and I was like, I'm not going to do something that I'm not passionate about. And I knew I had like the numbers of so many people. And I was like, well, maybe, heck, you know, I can spend my time just talking to some of my favorite people and pumping out content. And so that's what I did, man. I found a good friend of mine who has his own production company. And I said, hey, look, if I go help buy some equipment, could you edit it and put it together for me? And I paid him to do that. And next thing I know, man, it was like, I saw what I was doing just on my phone and just calling friends, man, and colleagues and people who I knew. And it started like we entertainers. I mean, we had like, you know, college coaches, Jay Wright, to, you know, Michael Vick, to, everybody, Donovan McNabb, all the people I knew, Ice Cube. And that's kind of how we started. And then I would obviously interview like some boxers. And then when I would interview these boxers, the episodes would like really blow up. And not to say that, let's say, the episode of Jay Wright wasn't popular, but, you know, let's say if I interviewed Errol Spence, it would be hundreds of thousands of views. And then I would interview, let's say, Bud Crawford, it'd be hundreds of thousands of views. I was like, well, you know what, maybe I should just stick more towards boxing. And that's what we did later in the year. We just focused more on boxing and just interviewing fighters. And I just started to really enjoy it. I mean, those guys felt comfortable and they felt like they could, you know, be honest with me about stuff that was, you know, usually they didn't want to say on air. They just felt comfortable about doing it. And then other fighters started watching it, and especially when they would talk about them, they wanted to, and all of a sudden I would get a message like, hey, Shakur Stevenson wants your number. He wants to talk to you. And he heard what such and such said. He wants to come on. And so then that's kind of how I developed those relationships with other fighters from other networks. And they, you know, it was great. I mean, I even remember when we did Berlanga, somebody said, Berlanga wants to come on and really wants to do an episode with you. And so I interviewed him. The first thing he came on, he was like, oh my God, you know, he's like, my man, you were like a G. He's like, this is like the ultimate for me, man. I was like, I'm looking around like, who is he talking to? You know. But he held me in that high of esteem, and it was flattering that, you know, he thought that much of me. And you know, we interviewed him and all kinds of just different people. And now, yeah, it's just, you know, guys just want to come on, man, and speak their truth, so to speak. And they feel comfortable. They know that, they know, A, that I'll give them the platform to do that. And B, if there's some stuff that's going on too, they know too. I'm going to ask you. I'm like, hey, look, man, I'm going to ask you about this. You got arrested for this, or you may have gotten in trouble for this. You know, what the heck was going on there? And they know that I'll ask them. But it is, at least I'll tell them right up front. As soon as it'd be like you, Abraham, if you had something, and I'll say, hey, man, I appreciate you doing it, Abraham. Now, you know, at some point, I got to get into why you got arrested and what was going on there. Okay, you know, and I give them a heads up. I mean, it's not gotcha television at all, but at least they know, and I think they respect that.
Now, that's a perfect segue to my next question, because there are times where you ask the hard questions, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some folks in the media at times that are hesitant to ask. Because of the position that they might be in, are hesitant to ask the hard questions because it could potentially lead to limited access, yeah, things of that nature. We're talking, you know, straight up, this is what it is, right?
Yeah.
You are aligned with Showtime and or employed with them, and so you have the ability to really ask those pointed questions, whether they want to hear it or not.
Yeah.
You're gonna go right to it.
Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been a moment where you had, you know, one of those hard questions that even if you told them beforehand, hey, I'm going to ask this hard question, when you asked it, they felt a certain level of being uncomfortable and may have had some words after the camera went off? No specific names.
No. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. No, not. I think in the way you're probably thinking about, but you know, I can tell you, like the last episode we did with Bud Crawford. You know, I grilled him about, you know, the Errol Spence stuff, because all we knew in the public was that Errol wanted to fight. Supposedly he wanted to fight. They had been negotiating. At one point had heard it was going to be November. We had a date and then it falls apart. So, you know, I wanted to know, well, what was the deal? You know, I heard this, I heard you wanted demands. I heard you wanted this and blah, 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 blah. And he was honest. I mean, he answered everything. I mean, he was like, hey, look, don't believe everything you hear. No, I blah, 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 blah. I da, 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 da. No, that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. And then once we were finished, he got done. He said, man, did the PBC put you up to do the hacking job on me? And I see what he talked. I said, I'm just asking questions I think every fight fan wants to know. I mean, I think all we heard was that, you know, that you guys wanted to fight. Errol kept saying, I want it. Let's go. And you know, didn't like the demand. So, you know, and he was like, man, I felt like, you know, maybe Errol Spence, you called Errol Spence before you did this interview. You know? But he was cool about it. But yeah, he felt like, you know, damn, man, why'd you come at me so hard? But it wasn't like the way you were saying.
Yeah,
he just
wanted
to like, hey, man, damn, you came a little bit hard on me. And I told him, I said, but if I didn't ask you the questions I think every fight fan wanted to know, I wouldn't be doing my job. But, you know, I said, look, I think you handled it well. You gave your side of the story. And, you know, it's all there. So, but yeah, that one was probably the only one where, that, you know, afterwards he was like, man, you know, you came at me here. But it wasn't like I said, are you ducking there? And I phrase it, you know, and a lot of it, you know this, a lot of it is in the way you phrase it. Yeah. And so once I had asked him question after question, I said, but I've got to ask you this because you hear it all the time. Are you ducking Errol Spence? You know, and then he was like, and then he gave his answer. But you know, you got to ask those questions because if you read on social media, that's all you see, right?
That's right.
You see it. Oh, he's a duck. And I did the same with Errol. We had Errol on at a fight. And when they asked him about the Crawford stuff and blah, 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 blah. And then one of my last questions was, you know, I asked Bud Crawford the same question. Are you ducking Bugger? And he looked and he said the same thing. Who's the first one who called him out afterwards? You know, I'm the one. So, you know, yeah, you do it. Sometimes they're uncomfortable, but I mean, we're not doing our job if we don't ask hard questions sometimes.
That's right. That's right. All right. Now going into something a little more serious, 10-year prostate cancer survivor.
Yeah.
All right. You know, you went through like true Ward Gotti type stuff to get past it. Right.
Yeah.
Looking back at everything from start to finish, what are your thoughts now from, you know, right now, looking back at it, being past it, and looking back at it, what are your thoughts now on the whole situation and everything that occurred with it?
Be honest with you, grateful. Grateful that I'm still living, to be honest with you. This August will be 10 years since I had the surgery. You know, I would never, ever forget the time that doctor, you know, basically looked at me and called me in his office and basically said, you know, you got cancer. It's aggressive. You know, I got to get you in surgery like now, like within the next couple of weeks. And I just, you know, I just remember him looking at him like, man, I had never had major surgery in my life. Well, you know, is there something else we could do? And he was like, sure, we can try a lot of things, but I'm just going to be honest with you. If they don't work, you'll be dead within a year. And I was just like, oh my God. And the only thing I could think about was like, to be honest with you, with my boys, like, damn, well, I see them grow up. Well, I see them graduate from high school. I see them graduate from college. Well, I see them get married. So the overwhelming sense is grateful that I'm still here. And, you know, it was like I had to go into fighter mode. Like I'm fighting. I'm fighting this. I swear to gosh, this thing will not take me down. And I just had to go into fighter mode. And, you know, cancer is a crazy thing because, you know, you have the surgery and you may think that you're past it. And then, you know, a couple of years later, you know, you say, oh, well, you know, your numbers are going up. We're going to have to do these some high grade radiation. I had to do like 39 bouts of high grade radiation. And I was trying to do that and work. And it was tiring. It was really tiring. But, you know, I know this sounds, you know, callous, but, you know, when that light comes on, that camera comes on, let's be honest, that the people on the other side of the camera really don't care what you're going through. They want their information. And so it was like, let me put my big boy pants on here and go deliver. And that was kind of like my mindset when I was working and going through, especially when I was going through the radiation stuff. And it was just really, I lost weight. It was tiring.
Yeah. Wow. And speaking of, you know, being the guy that is always expected to deliver, right, when the lights come on, going through that experience, now do you find yourself like stopping yourself when you're doing too much and maybe taking away from some time that you're spending with family or being somewhere? Like, is that now something that consistently you say to yourself, oh, hold on, let me put this on pause for a second. Let me refocus on what's priority for me. and what's not?
Well, you know, I'll be honest, the interesting thing is that I'm probably even more busier than I was then, and traveling a lot more. So what I've tried to do is like bring my boys with me a lot of times to different events. You know, now they love the sport. So whether like I brought one of my sons to the Ryan tank stuff, we brought him there. They come to the fights more. And so I do more of those type things to take them with me. And, you know, sometimes it hit. We did a fight just a couple of months ago in San Antonio. And I was sitting there. I remember we were going to rehearse. And I was sitting here like, I can't believe I'm back here in the Alamo Dome. And right after I had had my first couple of treatments, I want to say I was maybe on treatment like 10 or so. I had had it because I would do them like early in the morning, like 6:30 in the morning. And let's say if I would do them on a Wednesday, that Thursday I would do it and then fly out to wherever our fight was. And that's what happened. I had a treatment, flew out to San Antonio, and I remember getting to San, I just felt like someone just took an iron and hit me upside the head. I just felt that tired. And I remember we were rehearsing for that show. This was a good, you know, 7 years ago. And this was before the show. And I finished the rehearsal and I told our security guy, I was walking with him. I was like, man, walk me to the bathroom, man. And I was like, just can you stand outside and make sure nobody comes in? Man, I went in there and threw up everything because I think it was radiation that was messing with me. And I didn't want anybody to see me at that time because I knew we had a show that we were getting ready to do, especially my boss. I didn't want him to see that, you know, this stuff was really messing with me. And once I, you know, got it out, came back out, you know, we went somewhere. I went and washed up and did the show. But I was just thinking about that because we just did a show back there. I want to say a month ago, we were in San Antonio.
Yeah.
I just sat here like, man, I remember I was just here like not so many years ago and fucking just hurled in that bathroom right before the show. So those kind of things like come to me during this period. But yeah, to answer your question, I try to make sure that I bring them now with me to different stuff. I want them to, and they enjoy that. And so that I make more of an effort to do that now.
All right. And then now you've gone through so much, continue to reach new heights with your career. What do you tell someone that watches you on TV, follows you on social media, that uses, you know, your career as a baseline of where they want to be at? Like, what do you tell them?
Work until your work is done. Everyone's path is different. And the reason why I say everyone's path is different is because for a lot of us, we want that so-called success right now. And sometimes it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen on your time. It happens on his time. And someone can look at me now and say, man, God, I can't believe how successful you are. I look at me and be like, boy, it took me a long time to get here. You know, it took me a long time to get to Showtime. It took me a long time to get to ESPN. People don't realize this. And I'll tell you this, Avery, Showtime tried to hire me I think I joined Showtime officially in 2014. I did a couple of fights for them in 2013, the end of 2013. But I joined officially in 2014. They tried to hire me a couple of years before that. And I was working at SNY in New York City, and my contract was exclusive. So SNY wouldn't let me out of my deal. And I just remember my boss at the time saying, well, you know, whenever you become available, we're going to talk. So I could have been at Showtime at least 2 years before then. Like, I want to say 5 years before that, ESPN, and me and Hannah Storm laugh about this all the time, ESPN had called me while I was at SNY and said, hey, we want you to come audition. We're trying something new. And if you remember ESPN on SportsCenter, if you remember, they used to do SportsCenter on a reel. Do you remember that? Like at the midnight or the 11 o'clock SportsCenter would just rerun in the morning, and it would just rerun and rerun until like noon. And so they said, we're trying to do something called Morning SportsCenter, where SportsCenter will be live in the mornings. And I remember telling my boss, like, yo, is SNY going to let me know? Like, my agent was like, oh, don't worry about it. Let me take care of that. You just go up to Bristol and go do this interview. And I went up there and I interviewed with them, and I did this audition. Me and Hannah Storm auditioned together. This was like back in early 2000. I want to say like 2008, 2009, something around there. And we auditioned together, and it was great. And it was fun. And lo and behold, ESPN wanted to hire me at that time. And, SNY was like, bro, you're exclusive. There's no way we're letting you go to ESPN. No way. And they ended up hiring a guy, Josh Elliott. They ended up hiring him, a Josh Elliott guy. He ended up getting the job with Hannah and I think he eventually left and went to the Good Morning America. But he and Hannah they started Morning Sports Center together, and they obviously didn't get along, because Hannah always teases me today, like, you should have been my partner back then. You put this guy next to me and it was a disaster. We laugh about it now, but again, it goes to my point. You know how many years ago that was? And now here I am in 2023, but that was back in 2008. I could have been at ESPN back then, but it didn't happen. So again, you know, just put in the work. I just had to just keep my head down and just work, and don't be afraid of it. I think a lot of times, you know, this generation wants things fast, but a lot of it comes with work. And I've had to log a lot of hours, not only in the air, but on the job to get to where I was. But I've never been afraid of working. And being the hardest working guy on the team, and being a good teammate. Those are the primary things. You got to be a good teammate in this business. I mean, we all have egos, don't get me wrong, but I would say that anybody who's worked with me said, yeah, he's a great teammate, man. I love working with the guy. I'm always going to try to make my partner look good, because if he looks good, the team looks good, the accolades will come to all of us.
That's right. That's right. All right. And so I'm gonna hit you with three quick ones, because I saw that you have some things that you like doing and are into. So what's the on the watch side, right? It says that you're into watches.
I love them.
What would you say is not putting a price on it, but what would you say the one of the more expensive watches you have?
It would probably be the Presidential Rolex that I have. Yes. I'm a Rolex guy, man. I love me a good Rolly. You know, unlike other, listen, I know I'm in the Northeast now, and people are in the gambling. I'm not even in the gambling. We go do fights in Vegas. No one's ever said I saw Brian Custer in the casino. It's never been my thing. I don't know spreads that well, but my vices are suits and watches. Those are my vices. So yeah, Presidential Rolly would probably be the most expensive watch I have. Yeah.
All right, and then cars, right? What would you say is your favorite make and model all time?
Favorite? Well, it is right now. Even as a kid, I always wanted a red 944 Porsche. And I finally have it. And I do have it. I do have that. And so right now it's my baby. I only take it out when there's no chance of rain. So that's my baby. But, you know, now that I'm a little bit older, you know, I would love to have me a red Lambo in these days. but I still can't get rid of my baby. My baby's always going to be with me. So that was like my dream car. So that's why I don't think I can ever get rid of it.
What year is the Porsche?
It is a 1990.
Ooh, Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's my baby. I put the racing steering wheel in it. He's got the great rims. We put the Porsche radio thing inside of there just a couple of years ago that has that navigation in it and all kinds of stuff. So it's, I mean, I love it, man. I love that car.
All right. And then lastly, the shoes, whether sneakers or hob or, or dress shoes. What are ones that you have caught your eye, but you say, a little too pricey for me.
Yeah. So, you know, yes, I'm always going to be, I'm a Jordan guy, man. I'm still trying to get me a Nike deal. So I'm always wearing like some Jordans, and people know that whether it's at the fights for my suits or at the press conference. But when I, you know, sports center, things of that nature, yes, I'm always going to wear tie. I'm a tie up guy. I can't wear loafers. So I'm a tie up shoe guy. But I will say this, man, my suit guy in New York City, one time he had on these really nice Landon, they were like dress sneakers, but just, I mean, they look like a really nice shoe, but they had a sneaker kind of look. I was like, whoa, those are nice. He was like, oh, they're Landon. Oh, Brian, he was like, you got to wear these with your suit. I know you like this. He's like, but you know, my suit guy was like, Brian, I know. I see you with the Jordan. I don't like it. Please, you know. Anyway, so he told me, man, he said, why don't you go over to Lamb? And they were on. And first of all, I should have known because he was there. He was like, they're on Madison Avenue. Just go right over to Madison Avenue. And he said, talk to Karen. She's a good friend of mine, blah, 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 blah. And tell her I'd sent you over there. She'll take care of you. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went over there, man. I'm looking at these Lanvin shoes. And I was like, wow, these were great. Man, they had these black ones that were nice. And then she was like, oh, yeah, these are nice. They had this patent, like, leather top. And they were like, whoa. And I was like, okay, so can I get that? Ooh, and I like these blue ones, too. And I said, now, you and Sean said you can work. She's like, oh, yeah, we can. I can take care of you. You know, Sean has been great with us. So, yes, whatever. Sean sent you over, I'll make sure I'll give you great price. Man, she was like, here you go. And I think she ran up the black ones and she was like, you know, and this is going to be cash or charge. And I was like, yeah, it'll be charge. And she's like, good. With here, it's because you're good friends of Sean, it'll only be two. And I was like, okay, that's great. And I'm thinking, look, I'm stupid. I don't know. I'm thinking like $200. It was like $2,000 for these shoes. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like, and then I'm embarrassed because I didn't want to be like, yo, that's too much. I'm thinking $200. She was $2,000. I was like, what? And I told her to get the blue ones too. So now $4,000 worth for two shoes. Pairs of shoes, and I was just like, oh my gosh, man, I can't say like, yo, take these back, whatever, I'm gonna be, you know, Sean gonna be mad. I was like, oh man, I went and bought them shoes, man, and hell, I've only worn them a couple times because I was scared to get them scratched or touched or whatever.
Oh man,
that's my Lampin story, man. I'll never forget that. She's like, it's only two, I'm only gonna charge you two, and I'm like, okay, cool. $200. Yeah, and give me the blue ones too, man. The blue ones, $2,000. And I was like, oh my god, never do this again. Be cautious. If someone tries to offer you Landon shoes, bro, just make sure you got your big money card with you. You gonna come out some money for them shoes, man. And I learned my lesson.
Stick with
the Jordans.
Stick with the Jordans. Oh man, hey Brian, it's been such a pleasure talking to you this afternoon. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm definitely gonna write this up, put it on for Fansided.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna keep the audio and put it on my own podcast.
No problem.
This is too much.
Yeah, no problem.
I think everyone will enjoy it. And then lastly, where do you want people to get pointed towards as far as social media? Like, where do you want them to go?
Oh, it's easy, man. For Twitter and Instagram is at BCustarTV. And then we have another one at Last Stand Podcast. I think it is at Last Stand Podcast. Those are two. But at B Custer TV is at Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, Brian, I appreciate your time.
I see you represent the country too, huh?
Yeah. 25 years.
Wow.
25
You still years. In it?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. I retire later this year.
Oh, that's great, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Been covering boxing for about 7 years now. Okay. I was Michael Woods' understudy for a long time. And
yeah. And now I see you next week in Vegas.
I'm not gonna be able to make it. I had foot surgery, so I have to. I'm on the shelf for about 2 months.
Oh, man, so you miss Tank too?
Yeah, I'm gonna miss Tank. Yeah, hard. That was a hard one for me to miss. But
we got. And listen, I'm telling you, we got. I'll give it to Steven. We got some fire coming our way. I mean, you know, not only with Benavidez planned, you got Tank next month. I know Fandora's fighting next month. We got Puello and Rolly Romero fighting. They're going to announce Errol Spence fight soon. Obviously, Charlo and Tim Zhu.
That's fireworks right there.
Yeah, especially after, you know, that helped with Zhu stopping Tony Harris. And now all of a sudden people look at Tim Zhu a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jermall is going to fight Carlos Adames, which is going to be a really good fight. We'll announce that one too this summer. So they got a lot of good fire coming calendar.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
My brother. All right,
bro. You take care and have a great weekend, okay?
I do that, man. And make sure you get checked.
Yeah,
always go to the doctor, bro. Get checked.
I'm about to be 44 this year, so yes.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. If you got to get it, you go get your physical. Just get a PSA test, man. I'm telling you, it can save your life. It saved my life. So had I not gotten that PSA, man, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
And actually, real quick, that was injected in my mind the first time when you were on Talk Box with Michael Woods, Everlast.
Yeah.
And you spoke of it, and that has been on my mind ever since. So
yeah.
I appreciate you for the awareness.
You got to, man, because you know, they call it the silent killer for a reason, because, I didn't even have any symptoms. You don't have any symptoms with prostate cancer until it's too late, until it starts to spread. And for us, when it spreads, it goes right up your spine. Mm. And that's why people who have in the really severe cases of prostate cancer say, man, I got this excruciating back pain. That's because it's spread and it's gone. And it's a wrap. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
But before that, I mean, there's nothing. You feel nothing. I had no, even with, you know, some people may have problems urinating. I didn't have any of that. It was just like shocker. I got that PSA test and they came back and they told me my number. I was like, what? Just get checked, brother. Just get checked. Yeah, that's all.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much again. Okay, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, man. You do the same. Okay.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.